This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Good evening, everyone. You are currently listening to Tech Talks here on WRFL Lexington.
That's right. We're here every week on Thursdays, 6 to 8 p.m., so thanks for joining us.
That's right. So, first and foremost tonight, I think we probably should start off with the FCC and upcoming decision on net neutrality.
Certainly.
So, for those of you who are still unfamiliar with the term net neutrality, basically it is the notion that the internet is a free public service, much in the way that you have access to internet or access to electricity or water, that it's a more or less viewed as a public work is what the concept of net neutrality is driving at. It's also directed at not permitting companies to limit what you are allowed to see. So, for example, if you are, for whatever reason, viewing your internet from a internet service provider that is owned by Comcast, and you want to watch Netflix, if net neutrality is voted down, then a company like Comcast could institute a priority for any of its websites. Any websites owned by the Comcast conglomerate will get a higher priority and will be loaded faster and processed faster than any other websites. Conversely, they can also take
throttle.
They can take sites like Netflix and intentionally slow down your access to the website, which would cause things like buffering, videos having to be dropped or restarted altogether, things like that, and charge you money in order to be able to watch it at a pace that is more or less reasonable by today's standards.
Yeah. So it'd be paying one thing for internet access and then another thing for... And you could even be paying for a fairly fast internet package and that you might have an additional fee for HD streaming, mm-hmm. Because it's fairly easy to tease out of the metadata when you're streaming video online, mm-hmm. and... T-Mobile's actually had a lot of success in evading net neutrality through downgrading video streams by clamping down on the bandwidth that they give, mm-hmm. to videos on phones.
In one aspect does actually save some people money, because by doing that, that means that as a consumer, if you are paying for their internet service, if you have a T-Mobile phone and you have a data plan with them, then you watching a video, you're not going to be accidentally watching it in high definition, which eats up more of your data.
Well, specifically doing that to the unlimited plans.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. They've been doing that pretty much as long as they can manage to get away with it for probably the last 3 or 4 years, really.
Okay, I thought it was directed more at the lower level plans, which would be a good thing, where you have a set number of gigs and it limits the rate at which you can watch a video. Yeah, that's kind of shady. I don't like that. So obviously, big telecom companies are way in favor of this, because companies, again, like Comcast, or Verizon. Verizon's most notable, and I think the shadiest of them all, because the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, was a lawyer for Verizon quite a few months before. It was his last job before being tapped to be the FCC chairman by the current administration. So I don't like that. Especially after the fact that we had fought so hard and there was such public outcry the first time around for net neutrality under the Obama administration, in which it got written in, and had it been 2 full years, undoing net neutrality would be very difficult. As a result, they're trying to ram it through and undo it now while they're still within the 2-year period of it being a regulation.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a general policy in the executive branch, and that's what you were getting at there, that there's this idea of executive review where for up to 18 or in some parts 24 months after a policy is made, that policy can be pretty freely revised. And so since we're coming up on
the 18-month, I think. It's not been a full 24 months.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it's been 18.
Because I want to say it was in late summer. It was in the early summer of 2016, I believe.
So we're coming up on the 18-month mark since we gave Internet Title II classification. I'll talk about that more in a second. But and so the idea is that while they're more flexible in their rules, that they're going to attempt to reverse that decision. So let's actually talk about the actual classification.
Before we do that, then, let's back this up a little further. I think we've gotten a little ahead of ourselves. So we explained what the concept of net neutrality is. We've explained why it's important. And so we should probably start off by saying, again, about a year ago, the Obama administration finally implemented net neutrality after, you know, back in when we were in high school, there was that IPA and SOPA that were attempting to more or less regulate the internet.
IPA and SOPA would have had similar impacts to the reversal that we're looking at right now.
Exactly. And those would have been legislative options. So the legislative branch saw at that time that a lot of people were against a legislative regulation of the internet. So as a result, the Obama administration decided, okay, we failed on the legislative path as far as trying to get something like that done. Let's instead, the Obama administration did not want that legislation to go through. And they saw that people did not really care much for a legislative solution to protecting the internet. So they decided to do it via the executive branch with the FCC, which is the administration, the branch of the administration that handles the internet, as well as telephones, TV broadcast, radio broadcast, etc. So they decided to put it in there, and in the previous FCC commission put the rules together and approved it about a year ago, much to much of the internet's joy. And then a lot of big telecom companies didn't really care for it. So now fast forward to current day, and we have an FCC chairman who was formerly employed as a lawyer for Verizon, who is one of the big telecom conglomerates who is against net neutrality because they want to be able to force either you, the consumer, to pay more to get access to high-speed video for Netflix or YouTube or what have you, or they want to turn around and go after Netflix and make the corporation Netflix pay them money, which in turn would cause Netflix's prices to go up because they've got to handle that net loss
and
somewhere.
And then it would just push
the price back to you.
Just push back
no matter what.
Consumers,
exactly.
Yeah.
And clearly, as a consumer, we do not want that. And it just has a lot of implications because then they could begin sanitizing the internet. So if you request to go to a website, your internet service provider processes that request. With net neutrality being voted down, technically that provider could in fact interrupt your request, and if there's stuff on there that they don't like, they can actually sanitize that and strip away those parts of whatever web page and then pass on the censored version to you, which is obviously a big concern. So that's where we're at now. The next thing I want to talk about is, like Grant, you said, the Title II and what all that means. I think that would be the next place to go with this conversation, and then there's a one final place I want to go with it after that.
So as far as title classifications, I think you'll see just about every party and every group within this discussion use the term net neutrality with different meanings. And so let's step away from the word net neutrality for a minute and talk about the actual classifications that the FCC uses when describing
the internet.
The internet and everything in which it falls into the FCC's domain. Currently, radio and electric lines and city municipal water systems, all of those things that we think of as like
public works
and cooperatives.
Roads are another good example.
Anything that falls into that you can think of as having a Title II classification. We're talking the things that actually do have it are phone lines. Let me think for a second. Currently, the internet.
Cable.
Not cable. Cable is Title I. We'll talk about that in a second. So the reason why cable is separate is that think about the things that you can get away with in the television programming on HBO and Stars that we couldn't even discuss right now.
Yes.
The difference being that the radio wave is a free and open form of communication.
Whereas that is a paid service. You're paying for that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So in the same way where you do have to pay someone for the overhead of getting you connected to the internet, the idea is that once you're on the internet, all of the internet should remain open. You notice that when it comes to the FM band or the AM band of radio, there's not like certain chunks of it that are sliced off that you have to pay extra for.
Yeah.
It's an all or nothing deal, right? Once you get access to it, you have access to all of it. They don't make radios that only
tune between 88.1 and 95.7.
Yeah, yeah. You don't only ever get part of the spectrum. You always get the whole thing. XM radio is Title One because it's not directly controlled by the FCC.
Mm-hmm. And it's internet radio.
It's this internet satellite radio. It's something different. It's outside the scope of it. And so
It's classified in the same place as like Stars and HBO.
Yeah. So if you want to see the internet fall into a classification title where it is currently, which is Title II, which means that
it's the same as phone lines. It's the same as phone lines. Public that you as a consumer can talk. You know, a phone company cannot charge you extra to put you back on to, like, if you drop your landline and they come out and take your phone box out, they cannot charge you extra. I mean, they would charge you a certain amount for sure, but they cannot, you know, inflate the price, for example, of hooking you back up to the, you know, putting a phone box back on your home, because it's a Title II, and these companies are required to do that at a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm. And so it's largely Title II is a classification that's meant to be for consumer protection, and that's really what the drive is. So if there's ever ambiguity, or if you want to talk to your representative or do any of those kinds of things, the language specifically
that you need to use is Title II.
Exactly.
Because that is where the internet is protected. Title I means it's like a product for sale. Title II means you're entitled access to it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, here's a good example of how Title II has benefited us over the last couple of years, right? So had you heard of any single city in America that was doing a gigabit municipal internet prior to 2014, 2015?
No.
And yet there's several now. Chattanooga, I believe, immediately comes to my mind.
I want to say Memphis, Tennessee was one of them. Lexington's looking at a deal to be one of them.
And I'm not just talking about gigabit cities. I'm talking about municipally run gigabit cities. It's a cooperative. So like in this part of the state, we have an electric cooperative that's run by Kentucky Utilities, which means that the price of electricity cannot be unreasonably inflated because it's run by the cooperative. The same thing is starting to happen here in the U.S. that cities are becoming their own internet cooperative. And so access in these cities is actually bustling, and it's really improved the quality of internet in the cities that have municipal access because it's a public option. So that's something to keep in mind, is that we could see this continue to grow if we keep the Title II.
So the next thing that I want to take this conversation towards is what has happened so far in the leading up to this decision that will be made. I want to say December 12th is the date that they've said, 12th or 29th, one or the other.
I have to look at the number again.
You do that while I explain this. So up till now, the FCC, whenever they're looking at doing changing regulation, for example, they're required to have public comments available. So people have been able to go out onto the internet on the FCC's website and post comments, their views on net neutrality. Ever since Ajit Pai has been in office as the FCC chairman, this process has been very shady. It's been the FCC website has gone down several times, especially in response to different TV personalities such as John Oliver. And last week tonight made a big push towards FCC, pushing the FCC whenever all of the net neutrality discussion began about 3 or 4 months ago. And he really started trying to push the FCC to allow free and open comments. And so there's been several legal loopholes tried to close off comments or to basically ignore public input. One of the first round of comments they received, the overwhelming majority of them were for Title II. And I believe that at that time, Ajit Pai accused the comments of being falsely generated, and therefore a large portion of them were ignored. Now we're at the second round of comments, and there have been several studies. Several data analysts have come out with the hard facts. You can go down and download. You can go out to the internet, download the data sets themselves. They're available at many tech websites such as Gizmodo, Business Insider, or Tech Insider, or just about any major outlet of technology news that you could think of. You can go and find this data set or find a link to this data set, download it, and look at the hard data yourself if you so choose. And of the comments they have there, 1.3 million of the comments were believed to be computer generated according to a specific pattern of I'd have to look up the exact pattern of the words, but I saw several different comments that were all structured in the same way of like a noun, like Mr. Chairman, Ajit Pai, FCC, comma, and then I am for Title I classification of the internet, and then some adjectives or descriptions, and then it just was very cookie cutter and form filler looking comments. In fact, they also were quite a few people who reported that on these comments that they were reported as having listed a comment with the FCC when in fact they had not. And someone had just used their name and address and submitted a comment on their behalf that was not truly matching up with their feelings. So there's been a lot of shadiness going on with the FCC process of trying to dismantle the Title II protections of the internet. And as you can imagine, that's a fairly big concern,
Yeah.
I just, the whole business, it looks so shady to me. I don't like it.
So here's where we are as of right now, this moment. The, comment period is going to stay up for about another week or so, and then they're going to announce their decision on December 14th. So here's what we are encouraging you to do. We will be putting the link to the FCC's website. You can click the express button. There's about 10 things you have to fill out on the way down, and your name, your information about where you are, so that they can validate that you're a real person that lives here in the U.S. And when you do that, at the bottom, you can leave a comment. And if you're for Title II, if you're for Title I, whatever your feelings on this, it's important that you express them to the FCC. So we're going to be including the link that'll take you straight over to the FCC's website. You can fill out the express form. It's only a couple minutes to do the process. So I know how I feel about this. I know how you feel about this, Mitch, but regardless of how you feel, it's important that you express your opinion. Feel free to call us here in a bit. We're hanging out here. We would love to talk about this with you guys. So just whatever your thoughts are, let us know. Additionally, feel free to hit us up on Facebook.
That's right. So that's kind of the end of our FCC discussion for the night. We're going to head for another music break, and then after that, we have... What are some of the topics we have left after that?
Well, glad you asked. We have two stories coming up with Apple, one of which includes the ongoing fight that Apple is having with Qualcomm, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the software update that the Mac OS X put out this week, and how things have gone a bit awry with that. We're going to talk about an upcoming AI camera kit that learns to do object identification through reinforced learning that Google is putting out this year, and a couple other quirky little stories that go with it to kind of lighten the mood on the way out. So
up next, music-wise, we've got American Housewife off their new album, In Like a Lion, and that song is going to be Little Saver. As always, comments, questions, concerns, or even just chat, you can call us at 859-257-WRFL. Again, that is 859-257-9735 when we're on a music break. We'll see you all on the other side.
If you're hearing this, that means podcast advertising works. WRFL is now accepting new applications for advertising in a selection of our original podcast series. If you or someone you know owns a business in Central Kentucky and would be interested in advertising on WRFL's original podcasts, please email development@wrfl.fm.
Good evening once again. The time is now 7:01, and you're listening to WRFL Radio Free Lexington, 88.1 FM. That is us. That is he and I, being Grant and Mitch, your hosts of the show Tech Talks, which is us on the radio station you're listening to.
Yeah. I feel like one of those poems where the words start out and then halfway through they start flipping and going.
I'm telling you,
back.
First like you don't think I'm a psychic, and now you don't think I'm a poet. What do you do you just think I sit here and do nothing all day? I have interests, Grant. I have interests. All right. So now that that's out of the way, Apple. This is where you should say orange, or you should start talking about technology. I'll give you two guesses.
Orange.
That's right.
You glad I'm talking about Macintosh?
That's 100% right, because Mac OS has had the operating system for like a Mac Pro or an iMac or a MacBook had a pretty big security flaw here recently.
Yeah. So there was a bug that was reported.
It's a little bit more than a bug.
It is a bug reported to the Macintosh like security team.
That's a bug in the same way that a tarantula is a bug.
It is. Actually, are spiders bugs?
There are arachnids, and they are generally lumped in with insects.
I want to say, for some reason, by classification, spiders aren't. Spiders are spiders.
Insects.
Insects.
Survey says,
many people think that spiders are insects, but they are mistaken, since insects have 6 legs and 3 main body parts. Mm-hmm. Spiders do not. Spiders are arachnids.
Yeah, I said arachnids, and that's... So what I'm getting at is I think arachnids are lumped in with insects much in the same way that octopi are lumped in with fish.
Spiders and insects are invertebrates, but spiders are not insects. Insects have 3 body parts.
Spiders
and 3
have
pairs
2
of legs. Spiders have 2 body parts
and 4
sets
legs.
Of legs.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Okay, you said 4 sets of legs. My brain had to take a second to catch up with what you said.
Yeah.
So, probably because I know why I got confused. We kept calling that 3D animation of an AI learning how to move the 4-legged one. We kept calling it a spider.
Yeah.
And that's why I got confused. Okay. Yeah. So, fun fact, everyone, not only have you learned that spiders are, in fact, not bugs, but they're their own thing, and that the classifications in the animal world are very complex and numerous.
The animal commonly known as a daddy long legs is
also not a spider.
Not a spider.
No.
I didn't know that until right now.
Mm-hmm. It only has one main body part.
Mm-hmm. And it's of a different order.
I want to say six legs. It's one main body part and six legs, I want to say. And also, granddaddy long legs, even though they are not a spider, if they could open their mouths large enough to bite you, they are the most venomous spider on the planet. The problem is, their mouths are so small, they cannot actually bite humans. Hence, they are harmless to us. Now, if we were the size of, say, a common housefly.
A fly. Fly is a great example. I was thinking of a fly. I had a picture of a fly in my head, and I couldn't find the word housefly.
I almost said, like, chipmunk, but I figured, that's still too big.
But if you're a housefly,
you better watch out.
Exactly what they're going for.
They're terrifying.
Yes.
And it reminds me of that... So we are completely diving down this rabbit hole.
You're trying to drag us out of this.
You're trying to turn the bus, but I'm fighting you this whole way because I have to bring this up since we're on the topic of spiders. I remember as a kid, I cannot find the title of this movie now, but there was a movie where there were giant spiders growing out of this like mountain complex lab, and they would go around and somehow infect other things, like they would infect a human, and then the human would just like burst another three sets of legs or two sets of legs out of their rib cage. And there was one where it showed the dog doing that, and I was like, what in the world? Little 7-year-old Mitch was terrified.
I had no idea what movie you were talking about
until I mentioned the dog.
You mentioned a dog turning into a spider, and then I remember seeing that, and I think it scarred me almost as much as it did.
It's a terrifying movie. It's also a really horrible movie. The plot is terrible. What did you find it?
I'm looking right now.
But it's like they're just sitting in this old black man's house, and then the little white fluffy dog, you just see a silhouette from behind the couch where it's just shaking in the air. And then all of a sudden there's eight legs, and it's coming towards you.
Is it the movie Eight-Legged Freaks, in which, by the way, this movie came out in 2002, and there's an unfortunate chemical spill that has caused hundreds of little spiders to mutate overnight to the size of SUVs.
Jesus.
It's up to a mining engineer and the sheriff to mobilize an eclectic group of townspeople, including the sheriff's son, her daughter, and a paranoid radio announcer in the battle against the bloodthirsty eight-legged beasts.
That sounds right. The only other thing I could think of would be Arachnids, which is an equally scary and scarring and also bad movie about giant spiders, in which I believe giant spiders inhabit New York City and spin webs everywhere.
I'm going to start pulling on the bus wheel a little bit.
Okay, I'll let us go now. That I just wanted to get that point across that the little fluffy white dog turning into a spider was kind of terrifying. Anyways, back to Apple. We've brought this full circle somehow.
Yes.
Security flaw.
There is a security bug.
Bug. That's what it was, bug.
The Macintosh operating system that had a... very rarely are automatic patches put out by Apple.
But this
very
was one of them.
Frequently, it's put out so that you can... Even the security patches, you can download them at your leisure to install. But this one was...
Forced. It was that big of an issue.
Just about forced on you. And the issue that happened.
If you were on the login screen, this blows me away. Before we go into that, let's explain a little bit about how that computer will work. So a computer has what's known as a root user on it. That is the system over, think of it as the system overarching overlord of your computer.
Yeah.
It is allowed to do anything and everything. I mean, it can uninstall your operating system and then you're screwed unless you know how to reinstall it.
On Windows, it's the zeroth user, and it's called system.
Yeah. On many Linux-based systems, such as Apple or actual Linux or Ubuntu, is root.
On Android devices, which is where the term rooting your phone comes from. So what that means is getting the highest level of permissions and access
to do anything,
to become the prime user.
It's literally like being elected president of your computer.
Yes.
That's the best equation I can give you.
No normal user
can ever be this high. It's
ever
a super
needs
user
to be root. Like there's no purpose for an everyday person to become root, but
But so for example, you can temporarily inherit some of those privileges when you're using a Windows machine and the pop-up comes up that says
security run as thing. Administrator.
Would you like to run this as an administrator? You're temporarily inheriting some of the powers of the system user to be able to install or whatever. So with that in mind, on Mac OS and on most Linux machines, the term is the root user. And there was a security flaw
where
on Mac computers,
when you were at the login screen, if you typed the word root, all of a sudden you would get root access. A terminal would pop up, correct?
So the most common use for it was like you go to your security panel and you have to check that little, you have to click the little lock to change the settings, right? You just type root and nothing for the password and
boom, you're done.
So any user could become.
So if you left your laptop laying around and someone wanted to come up and open your laptop, they would just type in root and no password and then bada bing, bada boom, they in.
Yep.
They could change your password and lock you out of your own computer. It was a pretty not good situation, and honestly, a little surprising that Apple let something like that slip.
Yeah, so it's been an interesting week for Apple because of this.
Don't let him fool you. Everyone at Apple is slowly running around with their hair on fire. That's how this week has gone for them.
You can use the root to take over locked areas of the system's preferences that can range from anything from changing Wi-Fi configurations to creating and deleting users on the machine. They proved that you could do it on laptops from like the Switch user screen the next day, which is
a little terrifying.
Genuinely pretty terrifying.
You know, this reminds me of when here at the office, when I was still working here, I accidentally deleted the root directory of one of the computers. And fun fact, I was able to undo that somehow by going through and changing a file that basically, whenever you run your first initial setup of the computer, you make the super user or the quote-unquote root. Or the person that's immediately below root. As you said, on Windows, it would be like user 1 instead of user 0. And you could actually go in and delete that file and then reboot the computer, and it would think, okay, I'm a brand new computer. I've not set up a user account. I need to do that process. And then it saves just a little file that says done. And so I was able to do that and fix it, and all was good. It just goes to show you should not mess around with the root privileges of your computer because bad things can happen.
It's honestly kind of mind-boggling to me that...
That worked? Yeah.
That this bug is so prevalent and completely seems to have caught Apple off guard.
Yeah. For the computer that has been touted for many years as being unable to get a virus. That's pretty big. You don't need a virus with a security flaw that huge.
I'm honestly in some levels at a loss for words.
I mean, yeah, there's not much more we can say about it. They saw the problem, they fixed it, they forced out an update for it, and hopefully the issue won't be an issue soon. That's really all we can say about that. However, there is an issue for Apple involving their iPhone 7, 7, 8, and X editions.
Yeah,
is that what 7, you're saying?
8, and 10. And so this actually goes back to an older and a story that we've actually covered more than once here before, but it's an ongoing saga. Qualcomm and Apple have been fighting for quite a long time. Qualcomm, you may be aware of as a company, they don't produce any phones that you see, but they produce a lot of hardware that goes into a number of phones. In that capacity, they're kind of like Samsung, but Samsung also puts their name brand on the front of electronics. Qualcomm almost exclusively makes, and mostly communication elements. Qualcomm was responsible for leading the charge on the new generation of fast charging and wireless charging things. So that's where Qualcomm's gotten a lot.
Qualcomm's kind of a much more bigger partner with Android than Apple, I would say.
Specifically with Samsung, yes. But Qualcomm, quite famously within the tech industry, owns a tremendous, and I mean a truly mind-boggling amount of patents. And so they're constantly getting caught up in patent wars.
They often will implement patents on things like a Wi-Fi connector or like the quote-unquote antenna in your phone. The Wi-Fi antenna is often a Qualcomm antenna, you know? Most communications between wireless communications are actually cornered by Qualcomm. They do have a pretty good corner on the market of wireless communications.
Yeah. That's all exactly the kind of stuff that Qualcomm has ownership on. So with this in mind, Qualcomm and Apple have been locked in legal disputes on and off for about a decade now over who owns what and where the patents are and whether the patents are valid and all of these things, on and on and on. So Qualcomm has just raised 3 new lawsuits and Apple is now countersuing over mostly patent disputes, but they're actually over some interesting things in my eyes. Qualcomm, one of the suits is about battery life and the technology that goes into improving it and that they were ripped off by Apple. Another suit claims that Apple is relying on a Qualcomm patent to do the portrait mode effect, the effect that blurs the background to give a bokeh and then kind of sharpens whoever is standing closest to the camera, which Apple has quite famously shown off over the last
look at this thing that we put in our phone that's not really our thing.
That's what Qualcomm claims.
So it'll be interesting. Qualcomm is definitely a heavy hitter in and of their own right, and if these lawsuits were to in some way sour the relationship between them, I would say the iPhones are going to, they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and really figure out how they can get around not using Qualcomm, because Qualcomm is the leading name, just like iPhones were the name in smartphones, you know? Especially if they lose those lawsuits and don't have access to that technology anymore, you know?
Yeah, and so one of the things that I've been trying to examine with this is that Qualcomm is actually reaching out to the International Trade Commission to halt the import and further sale of iPhone X while waiting for this dispute to be settled, which could potentially go on for months, maybe a year or more, and it would altogether bring a halt to any sales that Apple could make, which really is kind of a strangling move, maybe a little bit of a play for a stalemate, you know? If you can't outright win your lawsuit, you can at least drag it out long enough to damage your the person you're suing. And so I think that at some level is Qualcomm's tactic here. Even if they can't win the suit, they're going to try to drag it out long enough, and they're going to try to damage iPhone sales enough
to where they want to settle. So, with that, I believe it's time for more music. Does that sound right? That sounds right. Up next, we have Savak with Keys to the City off their new album, Cut Ups. So, keep it locked. We will catch you all on the other side of this here music break. And who knows what we might talk about next. I saw something interesting about a cryptocurrency having to release their... basically their owner's information to the IRS because the IRS thinks they aren't claiming that cryptocurrency as income. So, all kinds of interesting things coming up next. So we will see you on the other side.
Hey there. you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.